Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 112, Nobility of Character. Thursday, March 3rd, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode features the following segments: Chin Wagon, The Front Porch, Ever-Expanding Skill Set, and so forth. I'd like to extend a special welcome to a few folks who have introduced themselves on the Ravelry thread. Welcome to Deb FL Gal, Debbie from Florida, and Crazy Knitting Fool, who is Kristen from Rochester Hills, Michigan. Kristen is also the host of Crazy Knitter Studio podcast. It's a video podcast available on YouTube. And I'd also like to say hello to my home port swap partner, Lorna. Lorna is LBrown8655 on Ravelry. She hails from West Richland, Washington, and the two of us are putting together swap packages for the home port swap, hosted by Sarah of the Fiber Trek podcast. So nice to meet you, Lorna, and I look forward to putting together some nice goodies for you. If you are interested in a getaway in April, I still have some spots left for the getaway in Greenwich, New York. This is north of Troy and east of Saratoga Springs. It is a farm tour weekend, and we will be staying very affordably in lodging nearby and having a great time April 22nd to 24th. If you would like more information, I recommend you first listen to episode 106, which is devoted exclusively to the getaway information, and then you can send me a personal message on Ravelry for even more information, or you can ask questions if you have them. In the last episode, I announced a Just Because giveaway. I have two patterns in my queue. One is currently on my needles already, and I thought it would be a fun idea to give some patterns away as a prize because there hasn't been a contest or prize drawing here and the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast in quite a while. Just before recording, I locked the thread and there were 19 entrants. So I used a random number generator to draw the first prize, and that was number 19, who is Candy, Pause for Stitches. And I'm going to read the posts of the winners, and all of the posts in this thread were just wonderful to read. I asked about gifts you've received that are very special to you, or knitted gifts that you have given that have sort of been your favorite things to give. And Candy wrote, "I love the Hedi Yi shawl. Actually, when I first saw it, I thought of my mom immediately. My mom is the most knit-worthy person in my life. I cannot even name the most treasured thing I have ever gifted her because there have been so many. She wears the things I have crafted for her all the time and almost always sends me pictures when she does. She also loves to text me every time someone compliments her on a hand-knitted item she is wearing, and then she proceeds to tell them all about her crazy daughter who loves to knit." So Candy, you are the winner of the Hedi Yi shawl, and I will allow a few days to pass because I know some folks like to hear their name announced on the podcast. And if I don't hear from you, I'm going to be sending you the pattern on Ravelry sometime this weekend. So then I thought it would be nice to also give away a copy of the Paper Cranes pattern. And the winner of that pattern is, for post number 3, ODP2, who is Linda from Bridgewater. I gifted this old forge by Stephen West to my dear friend Kathy and her husband Bob for their 30th wedding anniversary. It was such a great gift to give, especially since Kathy is a knitter as well. I think she loved getting it. And she includes a photo of this gorgeous old forge with a red starburst in the center and then radiating out into more muted blues and grays. It's just lovely. So congratulations to both of you. Be in touch, or I will just take the opportunity to send those patterns this weekend. And if you have a chance, I recommend that you read the posts in this thread. They are very endearing, and many folks included photographs of the items as well. If you would like to knit along, I will be hosting a very informal knit along for each of these patterns. I'll be knitting the Hedi shawl by Isolde Teague during the months of March and April, and then paper cranes in May and June. So feel free to purchase a pattern, select yarn, and knit along. In the near future, I'll have to open a thread in case folks want to post progress photos or finished object photos of their knitting. Chin Wagon. Before I begin to talk about any of my own projects, I need to seize the opportunity to do a bit of bragging about my student knitters and crocheters. I am the advisor to an after-school club called Knit Theory at one of the schools where I work, and we have been on hiatus in string theory since just before the holiday season. When we return from the holiday break, I have a very busy period of doing productions, and this requires quite a bit of after-school time. So I just hold off on the Knit and Crochet Club for a couple of months, and then recently we have started back up again. Yesterday, there was a lively crowd gathered in my office, everyone pawing through the yarn box from the Fiber Fairy Godmothers, pulling projects out of their bag, chatting, teaching one another. It was really a beautiful thing. The highlight of the afternoon was that Celine was wearing her finished woven scarf. This is a project that's been over a year in the making, we figured out, because she learned to spin last January. And she worked on spinning rolags in a color gradient. So she instructed me in the making of the rolags and the color blends that she wanted. And then she very methodically worked her way through the rainbow and spun all of her rolags on a drop spindle. Then this January, we warped the Cricut loom, and we used a worksheet that was provided with a Craftsy video on rigid heddle weaving to figure out what would be the yarn necessary for the length and width of the scarf that she imagined. She measured her handspun yarn to make sure that she had the appropriate yardage. She left with the warped loom and very little instruction on my part because we were both sort of in a rush to get that done. And then she completed all of the weaving, and she did the finishing hem stitch and blocked and trimmed all of the ends, and then wore her amazing scarf to school yesterday. So everyone was oohing and aahing over that. But there was other activity in the room as well. Emily was teaching Elise how to knit. She's an experienced crocheter, but doesn't know too much about knitting. So there was a knitting lesson going on. And then Celine was teaching Katrina how to crochet a granny square. And Courtney was using free patterns on Ravelry to figure out how to adapt them to make, I think, a mask that she was working on. Emily also revealed that she will be going to Stitches South to shop and take a lot of classes this spring. So we were all excited about that. And then the students had determined that they wanted to do a yarn storming project in our school cafeteria. And we got administrative permission to yarn storm one of the pillars in our cafeteria and cover it with pieces of knit and crocheted squares. So I went down to measure that just to see what we were dealing with. And when I came back, there were already two granny squares in the bin. So our plan is to put something up for April, which is National Stress Awareness Month, and do some awareness with talking to other students and maybe some write-ups for the morning announcements about the benefits of fiber arts for stress relief. Next week, this group or members of this group will be traveling to Newark to the Phillips Academy Charter School to visit Judith Simmons, who is my colleague from the Sheep to Shawl workshop at Fibercraft Studio. And Judith teaches at Phillips Academy Charter School. She is the handwork teacher there. So I'm very eager to take some of my high school students to meet Judith's students, to see the school, and to learn with the children there. So following our visit, my hope is to do a bit of recording with them so they can reflect on their time there and talk a little bit about the activities we take part in while we're there. The front porch. For my own part, I have begun Head Ye by Isolde Teague. This is a worsted weight, DK weight, worsted weight yarn pattern for a shawl that begins with a cabled border and then stitches are picked up to knit the center. I'm using a 100% Romney yarn. It's a 2-ply yarn with a very high twist. It's very round yarn, so the cables are showing up wonderfully in a deep brown color. This is, I believe it to be natural undyed yarn. It's from Pondwood Farm, a local farm in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And I'm also using, not yet, but it's all balled up and ready to go, some Dovecoat DK in the colorway Rhubarb from Ba Ram U. And then I will also be using the stripe of a rusty merino blend from the Woolen Mill, Battenkill Woolen Mill in Greenwich, New York. This is just a little bit of leftover from another project, but I think that the stripe will just be one little extra bit of detail in the shawl. I have been enjoying working on the cabled section very much. The pattern took a bit of getting used to because I'm not used to row one being a wrong side row, but I love the combination of cables and a little bit of short row shaping in the border. And I have 2 skeins of this Romney yarn from Pondwood Farm. So in looking at projects on Ravelry, it seems that it's not crucial to do just as many repeats as called for in the pattern. There are quite a few knitters who have done more repeats and created a longer border on the shawl. So I think I will be doing that. There's a right side border, a beautiful center section where the cables sort of come together, and then a left side border. And I am nearly complete with the right side border. And from what I can tell in reading project notes, once the border is done and you pick up stitches, the knitting of the center of the shawl goes very, very quickly. I think this is a beautiful pattern with lovely cabled textures. I am very pleased with my color choices. I think it's a very pleasing mix of a natural undyed yarn with some very bright and vibrant dyed yarn. And this satisfies, I guess, several aspects of my knitting color palette. So I'm eager to continue working on the shawl and see how it goes with different pieces in my wardrobe. Ever-expanding skill set. The featured ingredient for hashtag Power Pantry in March is the lemon. All month long, we will be cooking with lemons, and lemons, I guess, in different forms. So lemon rind, lemon juice, lemon curd, perhaps preserved lemons. There's already been a bit of discussion about that on the Ravelry thread. And in doing a little research on lemons, I was also reminded this afternoon of their properties as a healthcare ingredient. So lemons have naturally bleaching qualities. They can be astringent. They can be soothing on the skin. They can be soothing for the throat. And they have a great deal of vitamin C. So I guess they're a beauty agent as well as a cooking ingredient. I find that everyone enjoys things that are flavored with lemon. Maybe the very young find it bitter because their palate is still developing and they have a sensory experience that's so much more powerful than that of adults. But I think most adults and the teens I know like lemon flavors and things. One of the lessons I learned from my mother in working in the kitchen is that if you find that you're adding good ingredients and good flavor to a dish, but you taste it and it just tastes flat, then you should add more salt and you should add more lemon. And that will lift and brighten the flavors that are already in the dish. So it won't necessarily taste like lemon, but the acidic quality and the other properties of lemon will bring a lift and a lightness, allowing other flavors to shine through. And that is a tip that I keep in my kitchen right up into the present time. Something that's always in the back of my mind if I'm cooking and tasting and I'm thinking, this should taste better. I put a lot of good things in here. And then I think, add lemon, add salt. I also find that when the flavors of garlic or onion raw in a dish seem to be overpowering, or I just want to mellow that out a little bit, it's a great technique to do a fine dice or a mince of garlic, onion, or shallot, and then put that dice into a dish with a little bit of lemon juice and just let it mellow out there. It's actually cooking in acid the same way you could cook fish in acid, like ceviche. It's mellowing out there, and then when you add it to the dish, it won't have such overpowering flavor. Also, those flavors will stay consistent longer if you're not going to eat that all in one sitting, like with a salad or salad dressing that has raw garlic or onion. If you refrigerate that and take that out, the flavors just keep getting stronger. Whereas if you let them mellow out in the lemon juice for a while, it seems to extend the shelf life of the dish. This past weekend, I made one of my very favorite recipes with lemon, which is a lemon almond tart that was featured in the Minimalist column done by Mark Bittman quite a few years ago when the Minimalist column was still featured in the New York Times. There is a video version of the recipe, and you can easily cook the lemon almond tart after watching the video. And there is also a printed recipe available online. This is an egg-based dish, so it works well for breakfast, brunch, or even dessert. And it's made in one of the small nonstick skillets, because you begin on the stovetop and then transfer the skillet to the oven to finish cooking. It has eggs, a little bit of milk or cream, sugar, and then it has ground almonds as well as almond slices. And these could be blanched with the skins removed or unblanched, which I think is prettier. It has lemon rind as well as lemon juice, and then a beautiful sprinkling of powdered sugar over the top. It's really wonderful. It's filling. It's comforting. But because of all of that lemon, it has a really bright flavor. So I urge you to try this dish. I'm not sure what I will be cooking with lemon over the course of the next week. I would like to try making my own lemon curd at some period this month. And Jacqueline Salem posted an amazing recipe with pasta. It's sort of that true kind of pasta dish with pasta really done al dente, and then just a few really high flavor, high quality ingredients. And I find those kind of dishes so comforting. I don't have a gas cooktop, which she recommends, but I may endeavor to try that dish anyway, because the way she describes it, it's so wonderful. And so forth. I had a goal of completing another dress project during the month of February, and on Monday evening, I did complete the dress. This is the Esme dress. It's a design by Lotta Jansdotter, and it is featured in her collection or book of patterns called Everyday Style. The Esme dress is also a tunic. It could be a top without sleeves, and it could be a very long caftan as well. So there's quite a bit of variety in the pattern. The first time I made this dress last month, I made a tunic length or a short dress, and I used the caftan neckline. This time I used the regular neckline of the dress, and I did use a contrasting fabric for that. I lengthened the dress, and I added back darts as well as the bust darts, which are already in the pattern. I added back darts because I've been watching a video tutorial on Creative Bug by Cal Patch. And she talks about taking your measurements and creating your own garments, which initially I was a little intimidated to do because I feel like I still need the crutch of a pattern. However, I'm glad I began to watch the video tutorials because there are a lot of tips and techniques that are useful even if you are using sewing patterns. And the back darts is certainly one. The next time I make these darts, I will be daring and make them even deeper. But they really lend shaping to the back of the dress. And that's one thing that I have noticed with the dresses I've made so far. They look good in the front with the bust arts and the dress hangs down nicely. But in the back, it's kind of shapeless. And one of the things I was trying to overcome was to make a slimmer size by adding a side zip so that I could still get into the dress, even if it was fitted. And the side zip technique is awesome, and I will continue to do that with simple dresses. But now the back darts is pretty cool. One more thing I wanted to mention about Cal Patch. She is the creator of Hodgepodge Designs and does incredible workshops on dressmaking and garment design from your own measurements. She will be teaching at Peters Valley in Layton, New Jersey, which is in the very north of New Jersey, this summer. So I have provided a link to the information about her class at Peters Valley in the show notes on my website. If you have been interested in a handmade wardrobe and thinking about how to make clothes that really fit you, I think that this course with Cal Patch would be a great place to start if you already have some beginning sewing skills. So definitely check out that course at Peters Valley. I used the technique because the print I used, which is a very bold orange thistle print on a black ground, I use the technique of creating a full pattern and making sure that the pattern was lined up evenly on the print so that at the hemline of the dress, you could tell that the thistles were distributed evenly across the dress. And there is just a fraction of a difference that I don't think would be noticeable really to anyone but me in terms of the position of the print on the hemline. I also used the horizontal waistline points on the pattern as a means of lengthening the dress. So I traced the top shoulder portion and down to the waist of the dress. And then I shifted the pattern 2 inches so that the dress would be 2 inches longer than the one I had made before, and then continued tracing. And then I just blended that curve as I cut the fabric. That's a great technique. And I find that the fabric allowance for the dresses I've made so far is quite small, and I'm pretty tall, so these dresses are pretty short on me, which has been fine in the winter when I'm wearing tights and boots. But if I keep making dresses for the warmer months, I actually want them to be longer because I'm going to be wearing them with bare legs and sandals instead of high boots. And I feel like there's sort of a comfortable amount of leg I want showing, and it's actually more comfortable as the season progresses for my hemline to be longer than during the winter. It seems kind of counterintuitive, but that's what seems to work for me. So I did lengthen this dress by 2 inches, and I think I will continue working on that. From now forward through the summer months, I would also like to concentrate on some more lightweight fabrics, less of a pattern on the fabrics, maybe some linen blends. And I also thought about working on some other patterns in this book, including the skirt and the sleeveless top. Everyday Style, in addition to having patterns for garments, has patterns for bags, and it also has crafty project ideas. One of them is to sew your own bias tape. So I took some scraps of fabric from projects I've done so far, and I cut them on the bias and ran them through my bias tape maker. and then use some of this new bias tape to edge a linen scarf. I think this will be a great versatile accessory for the spring and summer months. And even though the linen is kind of muted, the border is very colorful. There are also directions for using fabric scraps to make little necklaces as well as bracelets. So I have a jewelry making box with some tools and different types of findings and thread and beads and things like that. So in coming weeks, I might also experiment with making jewelry pieces to go with my garments and maybe some jewelry pieces to make for friends too. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I recorded a bit earlier than usual in the week because Samuel and I are off to Saratoga Springs for the weekend. Samuel and his band, Bovine Social Club, will be playing Cafe Lena on Saturday evening. And there is a live web stream of the performance. So when I have a link to that, I will post it on social media in case any of you are interested in seeing the band perform live on Saturday night. An interesting thing about Cafe Lena is that performances there are recorded and they are stored. I'm not exactly sure what the name of the section of Library of Congress is, but they are stored as folk recordings in the Library of Congress. And there is a very long and rich history of performers who have performed at this venue. So it's really exciting that Bovine Social Club has played there and is asked again and again to come back and play for audiences there.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curd sings a bird out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or liking the show's Facebook page, or joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry. The music for the episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a